On episode 232 of the Tennis Files podcast, we'll go inside the mind of a 5-0 tennis player with special guest Dylan Sykes.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, welcome back to the show, and a big happy new year. We are in 2022, we made it, and I hope that you're having a great holiday season with your family and friends and other loved ones. And today we have a fun interview with Dylan Sykes, and I found out about Dylan through YouTube. I go on there and watch a lot of tennis and other content, I think way too much, to be honest. But Dylan is the founder of Dill Plays. It's a fantastic YouTube channel with a lot of great match play footage where Dylan plays a lot of great 4-5, 5-0, and 5-5 tennis players. And a lot of times, as Dylan says later in the interview, we really can appreciate watching players that are more at our level as opposed to the pros who are just amazing. And obviously, we love watching them, but we also like to analyze players who we aspire to get to at some day, at some point in time. That is actually attainable. just being realistic, if any 5 or 10 year olds are listening to this, this doesn't apply to you. But and Dylan does a great job with his YouTube channel, and he also has played Division III college tennis at Christopher Newport University, and he currently plays USA leagues and competitive tournaments, UTR tournaments, and others. So we talk about on the show today Dylan's experience playing college tennis, his ups and downs during it, actually a rough period where he got suspended and had a lot of time to think about his life in tennis, as well as, of course, 5-0 tennis, and also how Dylan got into content creation and putting up his many match play videos on YouTube and playing tennis on your own terms as well, and finding the love for the game. A lot of us go through patches where we hate the game, whether it's because we just keep losing or we just don't enjoy it and we feel like we're going through the motions. So I think you'll really enjoy that part of the conversation as well. And with that, I want to get you straight to the interview. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dylan Sykes. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files podcast, and it's a pleasure to have Dylan Sykes on the podcast. I really enjoyed watching his match play videos, and I'm going to talk to him about USTA leagues and just his experiences playing tennis and the differences between, 4-5 and 5-0 players and so on. So, but again, Dylan, great job with your YouTube content and other content, and really fun to speak with you today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. And I guess I must be doing something right if I'm getting on podcast interviews, which is pretty cool for me.
Yeah, most definitely. I think creators, they just provide a lot of great value to the world. And, 99% of it is free, and a lot of other people enjoy from it. I've seen so many people comment on your videos and like them. And, you're a great player as well, a 5-0 player. So definitely, you deserve some recognition, of course, which you're getting. So, just great to speak with a fellow 5-0 player as well. So, just want to get the audience to kind of get to know you about you a little bit more. So, what area do you live in, and are you playing USA leagues and tournaments and so forth in?
Yeah, so I'm in Virginia, the Richmond area. I always just say Richmond, but there's always surrounding suburbs. I've pretty much grown up here. Born in California, but it doesn't really count. It was like 2 weeks, and then we moved all over the place, but I really got my roots from playing tennis here in like Midlothian, Virginia, specifically at Midlothian Tennis Club, still my my home club down here in Midlothian. But I've been playing in the Mid-Atlantic region for pretty much all my life. Went to college in the Mid-Atlantic region. I guess that it counts. Out in Newport News, Virginia, Christopher Newport University. So, East Coast baby till I die, but that's kind of where my roots are right now.
Nice, Dylan. Yeah, because I was going to ask you when I looked up your profile to research some stuff about you, like why did you move here from California? You know, the weather and stuff so nice. But yeah, and seeing you, you know, it's a place I'm well aware of because, as you know, Mid-Atlantic sectionals, we would go out there,
right?
You know, play at CNU as well as I forget which park that is, but do you remember
Huntington
that
park?
Yeah. So a lot of great memories. Like I remember there was one where we had to like win the last match and we'd advance, but we lost and you know just like crazy stuff. Yeah. But you know you've been through all that. So cool. So I just want to get a sense also because we get a lot of cool stories about this. Like how did you actually get your start playing tennis?
Yeah. So both my mom and my dad, they play tennis. My dad grew up in Philadelphia, and that's kind of how he spent most of his childhood playing tennis. And there wasn't a lot of opportunities to get like very good coaching and things like that. But my dad had a bunch of community members around, and there was some clay courts, maybe like a 30 to 40 minute bike ride away from where he lives. So he used to bike there every single day and play. And then when he got to college, he was actually on the University of Delaware team for a brief stint for maybe a semester, but he always would, when he tells the story, he tells about how there wasn't a lot of inclusion during that time, especially for a person of color playing the sport of tennis. And there wasn't really a lot of support around it. And he just didn't feel that love being on the team. And so he just didn't pursue it any further. On the other side, my mom, her dad was actually the champion of her island. She grew up in Curacao. And so he played tennis growing up and he was a fantastic tennis player, and so she kind of always had played tennis herself. And so I think I got a tennis racket maybe around the age of like 9 or 10, and I was like, what is this thing? And the whole team sports thing, like, it was fun, but like I rather me win or lose based on my terms. And so tennis kind of clicked for me and how I like to kind of like do things. So that's kind of where I got my start. My parents were definitely a big influence.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And then how about your junior career? I mean, I have a lot of great memories about that and like playing in tournaments and stuff and nationals. Like, how was that for you?
Yeah, so tennis has always been kind of like a love-hate relationship with me. Juniors, I don't think I ever had that really good connection with the coach. I had a coach, lost one. And so it was very hard to get that consistency throughout, especially during those formative years, like 12 through like 18, where you kind of really need a consistent message when working with a junior. And I just didn't really have that. And so I'd be winning some matches, losing most of my matches. And so yeah, playing tournaments for me was something that I knew that I had to do, but they were never really like an enjoyable experience for me because I never really learned how to deal with those emotions that happen through a match while you're also going through puberty and then like the swings and flows. Like I feel like the tennis match can be like one of the most emotional things ever. And not until you learn to master that, can you actually like utilize that energy in your favor.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish I knew like the stuff that I know now, like when I was a
right.
junior. You know, I was always like, you know, I was scared of like how people would perceive me, like if I lost
yes.
to a player and like all this stuff. It was terrible. Like I would pray for like rain delays. Like it was
I would too.
It was not great. I mean, I did all right, but yeah. So and then you eventually got to play for CNU. So how did that come about?
So my junior career, I had one really, really good match against this guy who moved from Texas. He was like a blue chip or something like that. And I had no idea who he was. I'm just going out there swinging the racket like I usually
do. That's the best.
And yeah. I ended up beating him in 3 sets. Had no idea how big of a deal that was until people, when I came off the court and they're like, Dylan, do you know what you just did? And I'm like, no, but I'm really tired. Like, it's probably a good thing that I didn't know how good he was. But
yeah.
I think the coach over at Christopher Newport University saw that match and saw that record. And then I had one other good win against a 3-star. And he was like, okay, this guy doesn't have the results that we would usually like to see coming into a decent level D3 school. And we kind of would like to see more wins, more tournament wins, higher records, higher tennis recruiting, but I could see that he can play at this level. And so I think he was willing to give me a chance, and I'm really grateful that he did, because I mean, seeing you was awesome. It taught me a lot as a person, good and bad. So that's for sure. But I think that win and then the other win definitely like got me that college berth, because I always wanted to play college. I remember I had this dream at 12. I'm like, I'm going to play at UVA, and that's where I'm going to have my college career. Not really being realistic at the time and understanding like how good those UVA players actually are.
Yeah, there are a lot of them go on to the pro tour.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was just kind of a dream come true of mine to actually be able to play college tennis, be in that team environment, because it was so much fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm glad you had that experience. And you did play for a university in Virginia, so there you go.
There you go, right? If you just switch the words around, like, it means the same thing.
That's right, man. Yeah, so that's awesome. Trying to think. Oh, you mentioned there are a couple lessons that you learned. Can you share a couple of those lessons?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest one is that, like, your tennis, your wins and losses don't define you as a person. Mm-hmm. And you need to separate yourself from winning a tennis match and losing a tennis match. And it's equally important when you win to make sure that you as a tennis player and you as a person are two different people. And when you really start to entangle those, and maybe this is true of someone who is not a professional player playing for money, but someone who also still takes tennis very seriously, I got to really make sure I separate the two in my head, win or loss, because the wins might make you you don't want to be too cocky, and then now you become like an a-hole and people don't want to be around you. And then the losses, maybe you're taking that into other aspects of your life where you're like, I couldn't even win that tennis match. How am I supposed to deal with the pressure here? It's like the biggest thing, especially in the junior career after college, this is where I really locked in. I think I've become such a better tennis player mentally and physically just post-college, just taking all those lessons in. With a mature mind, a better way of looking at the world and realizing you really got to separate the two, because then you're not going to have any fun. And I think the perspective right now is a lot different, because before in juniors, your parents are putting some money into you playing tennis, so you feel like you got to win for them. And they just drove you out up to Northern Maryland to go play this tournament, so you got to go win for them. Or in college, you got people back home knowing that you're in college and you want to win for your team and your parents too. But now it's it's so much more free, where it's just the only reason why I'm playing tennis now is because I truly have a love for the sport. And I feel like I refound that love after college, because there's no other reason for me to be playing right now. It's not really a monetary value. I just like swinging the racket around and smacking some balls. So definitely, I found a new love for it. And I think just separating yourself from the tennis is such a big thing.
Yeah, I love that you said that, Dylan, because I was putting together a best of 2021 episodes, and there's a mental game expert named Joey Johnson. I forget the exact episode name. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, he was talking about how, you know, one of the biggest mistakes is how people, they attach their self-worth to tennis, which I'm pretty sure I did this in the juniors too. So it's like, you know, you lose a match and you feel like as a person, you're worse person because you lost. So right. I think that's a big thing that you mentioned as well that I want to definitely highlight. Good stuff, man.
It's so easy to do that as well, because especially when you're a kid, like most of your competition and the place where you feel the most anxiety can be on that tennis court. And so anytime I work with juniors, I am preaching to make sure that they're actually just enjoying the experience, because I mean, half the enjoyment of going to these cool, like say you go down to Florida for a national tournament, that's pretty cool. Separate the fact that you're going to go play some tennis down there. Maybe you got a bad draw, you play the one seed, but like you're going to go play some tennis down in Florida. Like you're getting this opportunity. You need to understand like, what are your friends doing this weekend? They're just hanging out. Like, really be in the moment and be very, very present, as opposed to it's just tennis.
Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, and you know, again, like one of the best of episodes was with this the president of JTCC, Junior Tennis Champion Center. Oh, wow. Where TFO, and Kudlatrain and so forth. And one of the things he mentioned, was that as well, just having gratitude about being able to play. And he actually like puts his players in contact with like their Special Olympic athletes and Paralympic athletes, like so that they, you know, obviously, you know, just like have a friendship, but also then they realize like, wow, like I'm, you know, able to like physically do everything. And like, I should just be grateful for the chance to even play the sport. So yeah, love that. And a big lesson there. So in terms of like regaining your love for tennis, like I remember actually like being burnt out after college tennis. I went to University of Maryland, Baltimore County and played there, you know, all 4 years. And then I went to law school and like I didn't touch a racket for like 3 years. But then it was like USC Leagues that got me back in it. Well, actually my best friend who got me back in the USC Leagues, well, for the first time anyway. So what was it about tennis that like... that you got re-inspired about, that like you gained a love for, that maybe it could help other people who are a little bit burnt out and don't realize like how great tennis is?
Yeah, I think my journey was a very emotional one. I'd seen you freshman year didn't come in really with the best attitude in terms of being able to deal with those on-court pressures. I was dealing with a lot of personal things at home as well. And I was bringing that onto the tennis court as well as bringing what happened on tennis court back off of it. And it just was a whole jumbled blur. I think sophomore year, I started to get my act together in terms of this is what I really want to do. I wasn't really in the lineup. Maybe if I was, maybe 5 or 6 and get taken out. And it was just kind of back and forth. Didn't really have that consistent starting spot. And then junior year, I got into some trouble with the school and I got suspended for a year. And that was tough. That was tough because, I mean, it was no one's mistake but my own. And so I had to go through that year kind of like realizing, okay, Dylan, like most people who get in trouble with the school and get suspended for a year, they quit the sport. They're like, that's it. I'm done. And I would really, my opportunity to come back would be my senior year right before the conference finals. And so... I started training while I was suspended, and you know, I was able to work on some other aspects of my life in terms of making sure my grades were right, making sure I was getting some internships. I studied computer science in school, so
nice.
I was working at a contracting company that was working with NASA. So it might have been, now looking back, the best thing for me to like take my head out of tennis just for like a whole year and focus on some other aspects of my life to realize like, tennis is important, but there's other stuff out there that also needs your attention. And so finally, when we came back, I came back right before the conference tournament and was able to play. And the biggest thing there was that the only reason I was back was because I wanted to be back. And it's maybe a control issue on my side, but it's very important for me to be in control of when I'm playing and when I'm not. And I remember my college coach had asked me, he said, "Don't, I just realized it's a whole mentality after you graduated. And even in your game, you can see it when you're hitting the ball, it's completely different." And I was really honest with him. And I told him, "Hey, it really bugged me that I could put in 100% of work here and just be killing it, maybe doing better than this guy. And then this guy gets the chance to play and I don't." And that would bother me so hard. Cause it's like, why did I work so hard, and then you kind of keep working hard, you not really feel like you're getting the opportunities. And of course, I'm looking at that through a mentality of like a 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid who,
yeah.
I mean, as you know, the mentality like greatly exponentially changes each like 2 weeks. So it's tough to, I mean, obviously I probably wasn't making the best mental thought process and analysis in my head then, but the biggest thing was being able to come out of college knowing that tennis is on my own terms now and that it is completely up to me if I want to play, if I want to play well, how much I want to train, I'm going to get exactly what I put into it. And then also I kind of had like a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, which maybe is not the best way to motivate yourself, where I never really felt like I had that respect maybe around that Richmond area of like, you know, Dylan Sykes, he's actually a pretty good tennis player. It's kind of always, and maybe this is not the case, right? I don't think this way now, but I definitely had that thought that, oh, he's not that really good tennis player. There's some other people up there. And I always wanted to be in the conversation of that top spot. And so there was a little bit of a chip on my shoulder that kind of motivated me to go crazy when during the whole COVID time when we got furloughed. And I was a madman training like a professional player. It was
nice.
It was fun. But yeah, definitely a little bit of chip on the shoulder, definitely be able to control my life a little bit more. And college taught me a lot, definitely about myself and how I like to do things, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I had some similar rough times, you know, like I remember a season where I was like kind of mostly out of the lineup and it was, right. you know, just a big test of like, you know, trying to be a team player and all that and trying to help the team and still practice and stuff. So I feel you on that. But yeah, it could be tough, you know, having personal issues. Like I remember a teammate who's, you know, unfortunately one of the parents passed away and like she was like, yeah, it's really tough. And then, she, you know, this person was really like, just like had random blow ups, you know, like just like screaming and hitting the ball on the fence and stuff like that. It was just like way out of character. So, you know, I can totally understand, like, you know, especially as a young adult, I guess, like, you know, having these issues spill over to your tennis and stuff. Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, I like I said, I really love like all the content that you're putting out there. And like, what inspired you to actually record these matches and put them out there for the world to see?
Yeah, so it was probably 6-7 months after my last college match, and I kind of really hadn't picked up a racket. It was more focused on, okay, let me get a job now. Okay, now I got the job. Now let me learn how to do this whole adult thing. I haven't figured it out yet. I'm still in the process. I don't know how to be an adult yet, but we're working on it. But, you know, coming out of college, 21, Same. 22, got this job, trying to figure out how to be an adult, still living at my parents' house. And so tennis was not really, it wasn't really a priority. And then I think someone convinced me to join some 5-0 team. And I was just like, whatever, fine. Okay, that'd be good. I'll play tennis at least once a week and we'll go out there and it'll be fine. And I remember I played this guy named Andrew Christensen. And he actually has a YouTube channel, iRacer Tennis.
I've seen him, his channel. Yeah. Yeah, cool.
So he comes on out and we played this crazy 3-set match and he's got the camera out there the whole time. And I saw what he was doing there and I was kind of talking to him and I was like, oh, you know, that's pretty cool. And so then I kind of started looking into like camera stuff and kind of started filming the stuff on my phone. And then I realized that people really enjoy watching amateur tennis because the pros, I mean, they're almost perfect all the time. And I actually don't watch that much professional tennis because I think it's kind of depressing how good they are. It's because like you go out there and you're like, oh man, I played so well. And then you realize that guy would have told you in about 45 minutes.
Yeah. And they're like 10 years younger than you and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I started kind of slowly messing around with some content stuff and realizing that like, you know what, there's actually an audience for this and seeing how well Andrew had done and then kind of slowly integrating with other content creators. But I mean, that was it's a long journey. Making tennis content is definitely not easy. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll ask you more about that. I was curious, did Andrew ask you like for permission to record or did he just like put it out there?
He did. He did okay, ask. Cool. And I always ask too. There's never a time where I'm secretly filming something because that's not the reputation that you want around. And I was like, yeah, man, most of the time what I found is that especially if it's junior players, and even adults, they are like more than happy. Like, oh yeah, throw it up there. Do you want me to talk to the camera? Like they want to know if they need to engage. Cause as tennis players, I feel like we really don't get that opportunity to see ourselves play. And it's so important. I mean, football players, basketball players, they're always watching film. They're always watching tape. They're constantly seeing their mistakes, direct, immediate feedback. Tennis players were like, bend your knees more. I don't understand how you don't see this. And then you finally go watch a video and you realize you're on your tippy toes and you're like, well, why didn't someone just tell me this like 4 or 5 years ago? It's so important to see yourself play. So I've found almost no resistance to filming matches.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only had one person who said like, I prefer not to, but vast majority are cool with it. Even like, you know, some like 40 and 50 year olds are like, oh yeah, cool. You know what? This one question that I kind of skipped over, even though it's like not quite in the flow of this question series, I guess. But like, cool. So you mentioned that you trained like an animal during COVID times, like which you know still going on. But what can you give us some insight? I'm curious, like you know what your training was like.
It's actually kind of, all right. Yeah. So so I got furloughed. Probably. Let's see. Maybe. February of 2020, maybe February, early March of 2020. And my entire idea was, okay, well, I just started really gotten back into tennis and was like kind of starting making more YouTube videos. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to use this time very, very effectively. So I'd wake up in the morning and I would make sure I'd apply to at least 10 different places so I could get the adult part out of the way before I go do my Dylan stuff. And so yeah. It'd be in the morning. I would either be in the gym for about 30 to 40 minutes. I would then go play some tennis. Usually in the morning was more drills and drill focus and hitting with a lot of juniors at the time, because I've always found that juniors are willing to stay out there for 2.5 hours and just drill under the sun. Then you go home, get something to eat, and then in the afternoon it'd be some sort of match play of some sort. So fitness in the morning, drills in the morning, eat, match play in the afternoon, and then kind of just rinse and repeat. And then also during that time, there was a ton of UTR tournaments, just an absolute ton, because the ITA circuit was out for the college students. So they were sending people on this summer ITA circuit, and there was just so much tennis all over the place. And so I was able to play like really good people and had some close wins against some really, really good D1 players. And it made me feel like, nice. Oh, I still got it. I'm still here. But it was quite intense. And I was very, 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 very motivated and diligent about my training. I had this, his name is Jim Cohen. He's in the Richmond area. He's probably one of the best fitness trainers I know. He's gotten me in the best shape of my life 4 or 5 times over. And so him and I were working very closely that summer. And he's like, every time we'd be out there, I'd say like, Jim, I don't really know why I'm doing this to myself. And he's like, there doesn't have to be a reason. Do you enjoy it? And I do. I'm kind of a little bit of a fitness nut. So it was gym, drills, eat, and play.
Balling, man. Love that. So can you share with us like maybe a couple, you know, one or two things that your fitness coach like maybe changed or implemented in your fitness routine that you think like really helped you?
So definitely like doing like quick agility drills. Like a lot of people will. So I don't think there was so there wasn't really anything specific that he's doing that's anything crazy, but I think it's more about the mentality on why you're doing it. People will do those spider drills where they're running baseline and they run over to the corner of the service box, but I don't think they really understand why they're doing it, and they're just running through it to get it done, as opposed to understanding that when you're going for a ball that wide, you need to be cutting that ball off as an angle, and that's why you're working on running that lateral forward motion. And so a lot of people, they're just running these drills and they're like, I'm doing all these fitness and ladder drills and it doesn't make sense. I saw this video on Instagram the other day. They're like, why do ladder drills? And then he's like hitting a ball. It's like intuitive tennis. He had like this ladder drill out. He did a ladder drill. And then he's like, how does this help my volleys? And doing the same footwork while he's trying to hit a volley. Like, if you think about it, it doesn't really make sense. And so you got to understand like, why am I doing these ladder drills?
Yeah.
You're doing these ladder drills for when you hit a 130 mile per hour serve to their backhand, they immediately block it back. And then you need to quickly get your feet around that return because the return's coming back really fast. That's why you're doing a ladder drill. So your feet can easily, quickly move around that ball to hit that next plus one shot. And so it was really understanding the mentality on why we're doing these drills, why this is going to help my game. If it's not, don't do it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's similar. Yeah, I've talked to like Dean Hollingworth, for example, as a fitness coach, and he's coached some professional players. And that was one of his like biggest things too. Just like, you know, you do see a lot of like different posts like where people are doing like crazy stuff or like huge box jumps or whatever. And it just doesn't really apply a lot of times to, you have to make it tennis specific. So right. I really like that piece of advice, man. In terms of like your USC League play, are there a lot of 5-0s in your area? Because I was talking with Mark Sansett a few episodes ago, and he mentioned that he had trouble like finding 5-0. So how is it around? Because I know in my area there's like a decent amount, but and actually quite a few coming from Virginia, like Northern Virginia. But how about in your area?
Yeah, so I'm actually I feel pretty blessed. I think the fact that I've also grown up here and spent most of my tennis career in this area that I know, at least all, I feel like all the good players know all the good players and all the other players know all the good players. So it's a good community. I think Richmond was honestly rated the number 3 place in America to play tennis, maybe in 2016. I saw some book about this just due to the number of clubs we have, number of courts, number of clay courts, number of public courts as well. I think it was Northern Cal was, or Southern Cal was one, and then Atlanta was maybe two, or maybe vice versa. But Richmond was right there up there. So in terms of competition, it's been great. I mean, at any given day, I usually have my entire tennis schedule filled with somebody good to play with, playing singles, doubles, older guys, younger guys. I mean, 4-5s, 5-0s. I don't really discriminate. So it's been really good, and I feel very blessed to be here in Richmond. And that's how we, I don't know, did you, our 5-0 team, that's how we did so well, just because I think we just had such a concentration of just really good people that have also grown up playing tennis together. So that chemistry was right there. A lot of us were in juniors together, and then me and Justin Cerny played juniors together and trained together. We went to CNU together. I had a guy, Tate Steinauer, Paul Mendoza, Brett Moorhead, they're all within 1 or 2 years of each other, played juniors together, all played at JMU together. So a ton of guys that grew up together in Richmond and then end up going to college, play together, and then we still play together. So it's a good little tight-knit family, and I like that.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, there's one guy, but he's older than you all. I think it's John Mook who played at CNU.
I know Mook. Yeah.
Oh, you know Mook. Yeah, nice.
He hits the crap out of the ball too.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got like a wrestling shirt company. So free shout out for you there, John.
Yeah. Maybe once a year at the alumni sometimes.
Oh,
alumni
cool.
Match, he'll be down there, but yeah.
Yeah, that's tight. Yeah, because I remember playing, I think it was on my team or maybe a different team, but like we had sectionals 1 year and then we ended up playing, Richmond team, and there were a lot of CNU guys, and then, he was like chatting with them and stuff. So yeah, that's great, man. I didn't realize that Richmond was like that strong with tennis, but it makes sense. And I don't want to talk about this like too long or anything, but
right.
What about, and now I'm blanking. Why am I blanking on this? Like, are there other like variations of tennis that have exploded like in your area as well? Like padel and what's that other one?
Pickleball?
Yeah, pickleball.
So I guess as a tennis player.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel?
Yeah, I know, right? Right. let me put on my political shades and want to make sure there's equal opportunity for everybody, so everyone has a great time. Yeah, but I think the only time I really have an issue with pickleball is that I've seen where they can make the lines. They do the lines very well on a tennis court, and I can see where they've made the lines. Like if I'm playing a tennis match and a ball slides off of a line that is 3 or 4 feet inside the baseline, and that shouldn't be an issue, and I'm losing a point because I hit some fast line, I'm pretty annoyed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to check my ego because I am not making millions of dollars playing the sport, and it's just something I do for fun. So
yeah.
You got to balance that. I mean, at least in the Richmond area, I've seen a lot of dedicated pickleball courts, and we actually have one club that has the full. Is it the paddle? Is that what they call it? Paddle ball or something where they bounce it off the walls?
I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry if we're wrong.
Yeah. They've been doing pretty well at the clubs to make sure that there's actual dedicated courts for pickleball and things like that. I've actually personally never played. I played once in like high school gym class against the teacher because he knew I played tennis and he wanted to beat me. But that was that was the only time I really played. I should probably try it. I'm sure it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's another good option for especially like the, how do I say this properly? But like, I see a lot of like, the older generation like transition, and it's like a nice other sport, I guess. But yeah, I think you would be great at it. I mean, I had only played once before at some like conferences to try it out. And then like one of my best friends asked me to play a tournament with him, and I played and we got to the finals. I mean, it was just a local tournament. Yeah, it was just a local tournament, but like still, like I think you'll be fine. I mean, yeah. So, but that's cool. That's cool. Okay.
With the volleys, and then, do you have to slap through them, or is it still like just like move your feet through it?
I would a little more slap if you want to, like, if you really want to like put it away. Yeah, you have to give it like a lot of mustard, actually. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, it's a little different, like, because I'm a baseline, you're an awkward player, I think. I'm more of a baseliner, and so a lot of it is, like, the touch shots, like, dinking it, as they call it, so it's kind of interesting, like, yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, yeah, so with the match play videos, too, I think this could be helpful for others who want to record their play, like, what's your setup with that?
Yeah, so I try to keep it as bare bones as possible, because... A lot of times with, unless you're like MKBHD, where like you're putting like quality 8K footage.
So that, good, so good.
Oh man, it's just beautiful. Like a lot of times you would just want to make sure, one, it's in 4K, it's 60 frames per second so that the ball's not choppy. And then those are pretty much my requirements. So most of the time I'm recording with my trusty iPhone 12 here.
Nice.
12 Pro Max. It does 4K. It does 60 frames a second. It's probably the easiest way I can record. And I also have my GoPro 8 that I'll do 4K, 60 frames a second. And actually, do I have the little... It's a little mount from Functional Tennis, actually. A little shout out for Functional Tennis.
Oh, the tennis mount. I got that one, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I have this one, and then I have that long pole that like twists up, and you can hang it. And I'll just attach my GoPro right there, just like that. And, or my phone. It really just depends like what the situation is, what kind of fence mount it is. Always make sure I check the frame beforehand. But most of the work and the reason why it'll look really good, and Mark will attest to this as well, is definitely the work that you do in post-production in terms of like correcting the colors here and there. And it's very minor stuff, but a lot of times maybe a green will look really flat. So you just bring the green back out. And it's really having that professional editing equipment definitely goes a long way in terms of building your whole match footage out. And so I use Final Cut Pro. I know a lot of people use Adobe Premiere. I mean, both work. Both are fine. As long as you find something that works for you, and you'll be able to compare some good tennis footage on YouTube versus some bad tennis footage on YouTube, and you'll be able to tell pretty quickly. But in terms of what they're recorded with, they're probably recorded with the exact same thing. It just matters about the little touches that you do in the end.
Awesome. Awesome. And like with the phone, because I'm sure a lot of people listening will probably record on their phone and for their own purposes. Like, do you have like some sort of power bank or something? Like, do you have issues with battery, or does it just, you're good with just the phone?
So with the cell phone, I think just because I have one of the newer ones, this is the 12. I think they're at 13 now, I think. No issues. As long as I come in with like at least 80% filming at 4K, I'm usually okay. The only time I have issues probably is in the summer if it's like direct sunlight the phone. Then it'll overheat and die sometimes that way. With the GoPro, I bring 3 or 4 extra batteries with me, and that usually will get me through a session. The phone is, like I said, it's probably the easiest way because I can just airdrop it to my MacBook and it's a no big deal. And then also what I like to do with the phone is I have an Apple Watch, and you can check the framing on the Apple Watch and the phone just to make sure everything's good. Because if you can get the framing right in the beginning and make sure you get every part of the cord, nothing's cut off, then it just makes your job when you're editing so much more easy. So I definitely make sure I spend some time there. And with the GoPro, they all have that app as well where you can see what the GoPro is seeing from the fence, so you know if you need to move it a little bit or adjust it. So definitely take your time with framing and you should be okay.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I recently got a DJI Osmo Action, which is pretty good, but I'm still kind of, you know, not the biggest expert in terms of like framing matches just because I haven't done too many of them. But how about like the height and all that? Do you have like any suggestions on the height and then any other, framing tips?
Yeah, so I've actually been experimenting with this a lot. So your typical fence is very good for kind of putting up. I wish I had the pole around me. I can't see it anywhere close, but I like to mount the GoPro on top of the fence, kind of looking down at the court and making sure I just try not to get too much of whatever's happening further on the backside of the baseline, but really kind of focus really on the court. Mm-hmm. And people seem to like that view a lot. The only issue is, the pros kind of have that view as well, but even higher. You don't see the height over the net, how much the ball's jumping. but you can see all the lines and where everyone's hitting the ball. And so you can see, oh, that ball was out on the far side. So what I've actually been experimenting with is bringing that a little bit lower and seeing more of a court level view. And now I haven't quite found the perfect mix yet, and I'm trying to find that. But I think as long as you're not too low, because if you go too low court level, then the person, you actually see this in some of our recent videos, if they're standing right in front of the camera, they block the entire screen. So you want to just like slightly above their shoulder height, maybe right at their head would be probably the lowest that would go. That way, if they're standing directly in front of it, they don't block the entire view of the court. Mm. But I don't think you can go wrong with setting one at the top of the fence. I mean, you're going to get great footage that way, and people are really going to be able to enjoy your match.
Good stuff, Dylan. Appreciate those tips. And then in terms of the, you know, what I love about your videos that a lot of people do as well is like, you know, you just show the points, like you're doing a lot of cutting. So is that like totally manual for you or do you have some sort of other trick or something?
So I can't tell you how many times I'm a software engineer, and I can't tell you how many times I've been thinking to myself as I'm sitting here cutting these points up, there's gotta be
right.
I should be able to build something to do this for me.
Right.
But at this point, I've been doing it for about a year or two. I can sit down, have a conversation with my girlfriend, and or watch TV and just be cutting points pretty freaking quick. And I do it with the sound off usually, because you can tell. As you're scanning through, you're just like, okay, don't need that. I know the keyboard shortcuts at this point, but so now maybe say a match that was 2 hours long, it might take me an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours to just cut it all up, maybe a little bit longer. That's just the cutting part. And where it used to take me like 6 to 7 hours just because I was just getting used to editing. So, I mean, like with all things, things get faster as you're doing them more and more. And then I've learned to kind of put up like camera signals like to my hands, like right before I'm like set two. So I know which footage goes where, and that kind of helps me, just little things like that. I mean, it's incredibly time consuming it. And so sometimes I totally understand why a lot of people don't want to do it, because so I'm partnered with YouTube now, or like they're part of the monetization program. So
yeah,
maybe if a video gets me $50, I've maybe made like 75 cents an hour on the total production value of everything. Yeah. So in terms of like time reward, it's definitely not worth it there, but I really thoroughly enjoy putting out tennis content and making it. And to me, it's honestly like a memorabilia, or just kind of keeping an historic track of my tennis career. I think it would be so cool if down the line, if I have kids, to be like, yeah, go check out your pops. He played this guy who went to Furman College. He had 2 set points, but he blew it. But go check it out. Like, it'd be fun. And then I like to go back to like 2-3 years ago when I'm playing with different rackets, and I'm like, oh my God, I was horrible. What was I doing? So it's honestly, I don't think you'd be able to do the amount of effort that it takes to put into it unless you like actually loved it. Like right now, it's not financially like great. Like that's not the motivation right now at all.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to keep with it. Like you mentioned MKBHD, excuse me. And like, you know, after 100 videos, he still only had like probably less than 100 subscribers or something like that.
Right.
And now he has millions. So I hope you'll do the same. You know, one other thing too, like the scoreboard. So, I mean, that's also like manual, you know, like after each point, you're like putting in a 1 and a 40 and all that stuff.
Yeah, so I get a lot of questions about that. So that was actually gifted to me by Ian over at Essential Tennis. Mark, and all those guys up in Wisconsin have been incredible support. Ian reached out to me originally, was like, hey, saw some of your match play footage. Can I use it in some of my videos? And I'm like, dude, this guy's got 250,000 subscribers. I'm dancing around the room. I'm like, I'm famous. And so I was having a great time. And we kind of formed a relationship there. He was using a couple of my videos to show, he would show me doing good things. Then he'd also be like, this is what not to do. And I'm like, yeah, that makes
fair.
Sense. He probably shouldn't slap line over and over and over again. I get that. But he gave me that scoreboard, and I think he made it using like Apple Motion. I know you can probably also get the similar effect doing some animation with, I think it's called Adobe.
After Effects, or
that's it. After Effects, yeah. That's right. So I think Mark has built his with After Effects. So that kind of like, that was a big help to me that Ian gave me that scoreboard. I probably will never change it because I just don't see a huge value in going and learning After Effects to make a scoreboard that I already have one. Right now, yeah. I'm all about time efficiency. Like, that doesn't seem like a good sink of 12 hours of my time. So Ian was very nice to have given me that. You know, I should talk to him. He probably should like sell that in some capacity, because there's so many comments that I get. Dylan, can I get your scoreboard? Dylan, can I get your scoreboard? And I don't give it out because he gave that to me as a gift. So
yeah,
I should talk to him about that. Maybe he should set up some sort of online marketplace, pay $5 and you get access to a scoreboard or something.
And you get a royalty for the idea.
Exactly. Just a mild 49%, you know.
Yeah. Or more. But do you still have to change like the score each time though?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Got you.
Yeah.
Got
so you. It's, I would show you my timeline on the editing. It's like every single point's broken up, and then atop the titles of the point is broken up. It's time consuming, but like I said, I've gotten so used to it at this point. I think one time my girlfriend was like, is there any way that I can help you like edit these videos, help like the time process go faster? And I was like, I appreciate you saying that, but like at this point, it would take me more time to try to teach you how to do it as opposed to just... If you just give me an hour right now, I'll come talk to you an hour and let me just knock this out. And she's been pretty supportive, because as a lot of the times I'm trying, my goal is to put out at least 1 to 2 videos a week. Now that doesn't always happen based on like whether I'm playing that week or I'm not. But if I'm putting out 1 to 2 videos a week, that means 3 or 4 nights out of the week I'm editing. And so that takes away from time with her, but she's been incredibly supportive. And so she just knows, like, all right, if I just don't talk to him for an hour, he'll be back in an hour. We'll hang out again.
Good stuff. Well, that is super important. Glad you're lucky enough to have a great partner like that. Let's see what else I got for you. Oh, yeah. In terms of your gear, like you mentioned, like looking back at gear and whatnot, what are you using right now?
So right now I got the Tourbite. Hold on. I got it right here.
Oh, Solenko Tourbite?
Yeah, so I use Solenko Tourbite Diamond Rough, and then I also am using my I got the Pure Strike Tour from Babolat that I've been liking a lot. I'm thinking about trying some Yonex rackets. I've that V-Core Pro looks super cool. I think it's like 330 grams.
Oh, yeah.
Been talking with Diadem a little bit, maybe start using some Diadem strings. I've tried out their Solstice. That was really, really nice. I also work with a company called Advantage Pro. They make strings, ADV Tennis. They make strings, they make dampeners, they make overgrips, they make wristbands. They're probably my favorite wristbands out there. And then I work with another company, VT Advantech, that makes this undergrip that's absolutely perfect for vibration dampening. So I've kind of expanded my gear recently in the past just like year or so, just companies reaching out saying, hey, would you like to try our product? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I've been able to try a bunch of stuff, but right now it's been the Babolat stick, and the Solenko strings has been the main.
That's awesome. Yeah, I use Solenko Hyper G 16L right now. I imagine, have you probably tried those? I'm curious, like, what you think between, like, the difference between those two.
Yeah, so the Hyper G is really stiff, but I do like that in terms of, like, you're really, really going to bite the ball. I've been using 16L as well. I feel like 16 is just a little bit too thick.
Yeah,
and like, 17, I'm going to break in like a day and a half.
Right.
And like, as much as I love stringing tennis rackets, and it's like just a huge pastime of, I'm kidding, but I hate stringing rackets, but
yeah, same.
It's 16L works for me. The Solenko Tourbite Diamond Rough is slightly different than the Tourbite. I think they might twist the strings a little bit, and it's a little bit softer as well. And so I always recommend the Diamond Rough to somebody who has like arm issues, because I found that a lot of people really like the Hyper G. But after playing with it for a week, they're just like, their arm just cannot take it. Because it's just, I mean, it's a stiff racket, especially if you're going to, I mean, a stiff string. Especially if you're going to be stringing up in the high 50s, it's, you're going to feel it if your arm's not used to that. So I usually switch them over to some Diamond Rough, and they tend to like it just because it's a little bit softer, but you're not sacrificing the spin.
That makes sense. Yeah, you got to be a strong young chap like Mark Sanset to use that Hyper G. I hope he hears this. Good stuff. Speaking of which, did you meet Mark through Ian? Is that how that worked out?
Yeah, so I met Ian, and we were talking back and forth there just through email, and he used my videos a little bit. And then I saw that Mark was on the channel, and then I started watching Mark's videos, and I think I might have reached out to Mark, and then Ian like vouched for me. He's like, yeah, I talked to Dylan, he's a nice guy. So then me and Mark started talking, and then I was like, you know what, I just need to come up and visit you guys. I had a buddy who was living probably an hour away from them that I hadn't seen in a couple of years. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to come see him. I'm going to come play some tennis. Perfect. And was able to meet Mark. And honestly, that was meeting people on the internet. You know, it's always scary. You don't really know how they are. You know, a person is one way when they're on camera, and they're another way when they're not. Mark is the same exact person no matter what's going on. He's just a nice, friendly guy. Loves to crack jokes. Good sports in terms of sportsmanship, and great competitor. So, you know, definitely upset that I lost that match, but I'm coming back, and he knows it.
Yeah, I'm sure you're coming back with a vengeance, man. So good stuff, good stuff. So I'm curious too, like, what is the biggest struggle that you are having in your game right now?
Opportunities to play competitive matches.
Oh,
that's the biggest thing. Because so most, like 90% of the tennis that you guys see on YouTube is just me and my buddies getting out there and having some fun, not really a lot of sanctioned matches. And so, like, I was like a 10, I think the highest ever was like a 10-9 UTR. Solid. And that was that summer where there was just a ton of college kids to play against at UTR tournaments. I was going down to South Carolina, I was going up to North Virginia, I was in Maryland for a little bit playing. And so it was just a ton of good competitive tennis. And I think now if you check my UTR, it's like a 9.2, just because I've lost all those competitive results. And it is just so hard to find opportunities for a washed up college kid to go play some really good matches. So it's like if I do find some UTR tournaments, I'm playing against some eights and nines. And I know that I can play at that 11 level, and I would like to, and maybe even further. But if you don't get those opportunities to see that ball all the time, then it's going to be very tough to progress your game. So
100%.
I mean, right now it's, I mean, obviously, you know, cause like I could work on my volleys, you know, or I could work on my serve. My serve has been improving a lot, but I need more tests at that higher level. And a lot of my buddies who are at that higher level, they're busy. You know, they're usually teaching tennis themselves, or they're traveling, doing their other things. So I'm mostly playing against, you know, that 9 to 7 range nowadays. So, you know, hey, if anyone's out there wants to come to Richmond to play me in tennis, let's do it. I love playing tennis. So
awesome, man.
Just need more competitive opportunities.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that makes sense. I would love to come down there at some point, you know, when you have some time, and
absolutely,
you know, hit and record something. It'd be fun. And let's see what else we got for you. In terms of, you know, your insight in forehand, I remember you talking about that a little while ago. If you know, hopefully I'm not misremembering, but you were saying that you were having some. Okay, great. Yeah, you mentioned that you were having some trouble with that. And then I think you put out like a shorts video, maybe it was, and showing that it was improving. I'm curious just about like that, and that's kind of nuanced, but like what trouble were you having with that shot, and then how were you able to improve it?
So my inside out forehand's always been my best shot. And I think that's just probably due to some technical deficiencies there, where I'm constantly late on my forehand. So if you're constantly late on your forehand, usually you can hit a pretty gnarly inside out forehand. And so that's just kind of how it's always been. So my forehand cross court was also, as a result, very weak, and I would hate getting into that pattern. My idea of a tennis match is, okay, survive cross court forehands, get to the backhand with an inside out or forehand down the line. And then my backhand, I love my backhand. It's pretty solid, and I can usually work there at the inside out. The only piece that I was missing there with that pattern, and something wrong with that pattern, is that I can't win the point on an inside in. And I think that was just a result of just footwork and coming a little late. And I mean, you know, definitely you're going to admit some secrets. Sometimes you ask questions on YouTube just to formulate some engagement as well. Just be like, hey, I'm having trouble here. And so you maybe will get a little bit more comments that way. I think it's just a game that any content creator plays a little bit just to try to get some engagement. But also YouTube has, they've been like a coach away from a coach. They've brought up some things in my games that I didn't realize that I was doing. Ian actually made a whole video about how Dylan never hits cross court, and that's why he does so much running. And they're like, Dylan is fast, and the only reason why he gets away playing like this is because he's fast. Don't be like Dylan, because Dylan just runs back and forth because he goes line, they go cross, and then I go line, they go cross.
Right.
So I'm basically just like running some sort of like pattern drill that is not in my favor. So I've learned a lot about myself in terms about what other people see in my game. I mean, a lot of people say I'm a 3-5 at best. I'm a Novak reincarnated. You know, I get all.
Yeah, that's a good one. Edemo.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, actually, that was one of my questions I wanted to ask you. What is, and I know you actually have to go somewhat soon, but what has been the worst comment that you've received, if you could share it?
Oh, man, worst comment. I'm pretty good about like not taking things to skin, but I mean,
yeah,
I get those like this is 3-0 tennis at best or 3-5 tennis, and sometimes I never know if they're joking or not, and I obviously don't.
Right.
I know I'm not a 3-5 tennis player. Someone who so yeah, if anyone knows what 3-5 tennis looks like, and then they watch me play tennis, it's vastly different.
Yeah,
but it was maybe something along of like no one cares. Why do you think someone cares about your tennis game? Like things like that. But then you gotta understand if people are gonna take the time out of their day to write something nasty to them, that you should honestly have some sympathy for them because
yeah,
there's something going on in their lives. Like if I see something and I don't take 15 to 20 seconds out of my day to hold on, let me make sure it was about what I'm thinking, and then you know, like, be mean. Like say when you see nasty comments, you're gonna get them. If you're gonna put yourself out there, you're gonna get them. So I actually figured that I would get some more like maybe some like race stuff come at me or something playing tennis, but honestly it's been great, and I think it's a testament of the tennis community on YouTube that really the worst things that I've had to experience was people think I'm a 3-0, and if that's the case, I could deal with that. That's fine.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Well, I definitely commend your attitude. You know, it is tough, like initially, like you do remember like the bad comments more than the good ones, but definitely just like you said, I have compassion for the person probably having a rough time if they're going to write like crazy stuff like that. Yeah, I've actually had like some like emails before where they're like "F you," like then I'm like, "Hey,
oh,
what's
really?"
up? yeah. But it's just like one once.
They send you an email. That's way more personal than a comment. An email is like they sat down and they formulated this email. Like
they formulated that F and the U. But I think it was like my email was too long or something, and they were just like having a bad day. But anyway, it's interesting. I hope you and the audience enjoyed that. And then. It's always funny to look at this stuff. What are three books that you would gift a friend to help them improve their tennis game?
Ooh, okay. So definitely Winning Ugly by Brad Gilbert. There is, it's really small. It's about like, I can't think of the name of it. It's really small. It's about like the mentality of tennis and like talking to oneself versus, I can't think.
Oh, Inner Game of Tennis?
That's it.
Yeah,
Inner Game.
Got
it. That was a really, really good one. And then I haven't read it, but I've heard good things about the Agassi book.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of why he hates tennis so much. And I think that I probably could find some similarities there and like why his kids will never play tennis. I'm kind of back and forth on. Sometimes I'm like, I want my kids to play tennis. Other times I'm like, this sport is demands a lot out of you from as an individual, mentally and physically. So those three books. Winning Ugly, though, for sure. You got to know that. And The Inner Game as well, because there's been since I read that book multiple times where I'm on the court, I'm like, okay, I understand what's going on here. Like the dialogue eternally within yourself. I think that it's a really small book, 150 pages maybe. You can probably read that in a plane ride. And it's really good. That's what I'd recommend.
Nice. Thanks for those recommendations. Yeah, I mean, but Agassi and Graf, though, like their kid would be so good. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see
what happens.
Please. So good stuff, man. So obviously want to get the audience to check out your stuff, because like I said, I'm a big fan of your videos, your content, and you're putting a lot of work into them, like you mentioned, especially with the editing. So where can people find your stuff, Dylan?
Yeah, so youtube.com/DillPlays. You'll find me there. You can honestly just Google Dill Plays or Dylan Sykes, and you'll probably, all my stuff will pop up. I have an Instagram as well at Dill Plays Tennis, because somebody took the Dill Plays thing on Instagram already. So it's at Dill Plays Tennis. And then I've been trying to become TikTok famous recently. Hasn't really been going well, but at Dill Plays at TikTok as well. So basically everything Dill Plays and Dill Plays Tennis, you'll find my stuff. I try to make myself very SEO friendly. So if you just really Google my name, you should find it all.
Nice, nice, nice. Love that. Cool. All right. Well, I just want to leave you with the floor. Dylan, is there anything that you want to share in terms of like helping people improve their tennis game or any other thoughts you want to just bring up to us before we adjourn?
Yeah. I guess to juniors, your journey in tennis is yours. And I understand that you have a lot of pressure out there from parents, coaches, and things like that. But you really need to make sure that you're taking ownership of your journey and making sure that you're finding the joy out of your journey, because I would rather you have a maybe mediocre career but enjoyed it, as opposed to an extremely successful career but you hate every second of it. I think a lot of times juniors get lost in the fact that their journey is their own and they kind of lose themselves in their parents and their coaches and things like that. And Just understand your journey is your own, and if you want to be successful in tennis, you will, but you got to enjoy it, and you got to own it.
Love that, Dylan. Thank you for sharing that. Appreciate that. Very wise words, eloquently put, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. So, Dylan, thanks a lot for coming on to the podcast. Really enjoyed chatting with you. Like I said, hopefully
Absolutely.
We'll get to meet up. That'd be great in person, obviously, and play some tennis. And yeah, just wish you the best. And for everybody, definitely, like I said, check out Dylan's work on YouTube as well as TikTok and Instagram. And Dylan, we'll chat soon. So appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I would love to. Let's do it again.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you.
All right. I really hope that you enjoyed my interview with Dylan. And Dylan, thanks for coming on to the show and keep making that fire content on YouTube, my friend. And really appreciate you listening to this episode. And if you enjoy the Tennis Files podcast, I would very much appreciate it if you left a review for the show. And you could do that at tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts or on your favorite app of choice that you use to listen to the show. Just click the review button on that app and go for it. So thanks again in advance. And thanks to all of you who have left a review. I think it's we're over 100 now, so that is fantastic. And as always, the links from the show will be available on the show notes page, which is going to be in your app as well. So just check that out. And you can also go to tennisfiles.com/podcast to check out all of the episodes. And lastly, tennisfiles.com/ and then the number of the episode as well for the direct page for this episode with the episode summary and the links. So this one would be tennisfiles.com/232. Can't believe we're up to this many episodes, but it happened. And we'll keep going, of course, with your support. Really, really appreciate that again. And I'll leave you with a quote, as I often love to do at the end of the show. And this one is by Eckhart Tolle. Maybe it's Tolle or it's Tolle, I'm not sure. But Eckhart said, "Instead of asking, what do I want from life? A more powerful question is, what does life want from me?" Very deep quote there. Thank you, Eckhart, for those deep thoughts and expressions. All right. So with that, again, I wish you a very prosperous and happy new year, and really go for it this year and take action. That's the biggest thing that I'm trying to do, is to take more action instead of just studying things, you know, forever. You got to apply it and keep improving 1% each day, and you'll be 38 times better than you were in the beginning of the year. And this is the perfect time to apply that maxim, because we're in the beginning of the year. So all the best to you. Thanks again and have a great one. This is Mirabai Naranchad signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.